Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David. This is the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is July 1, 2016, or it's the 27th day of the 4th month, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, He Hideth My Soul. A wonderful Savior is Yahshua my King, a wonderful Savior to be. He hideth my soul in the cleft of the rock, where rivers of pleasure I see. He hideth my soul in the cleft of the rock, the shadows of dry, thirsty land. He hideth my life in the depths of his love, and covers me there with his hand, and covers me there with his hand. A wonderful Savior is Yahshua my King. He taketh my burden away. He holdeth me up and I shall not be moved. He giveth me strength as my day. He hideth my soul in the cleft of the rock, the shadows of dry, thirsty land. He hideth my heart in the depths of his love, and covers me there with his hand, and covers me there with his hand. With numberless blessings this moment he crowned, and filled with his fullness divine. I sing in my rapture, O glory to Yah, O such a Redeemer as mine. He hideth my soul in the cleft of the rock, the shadows of dry, thirsty land. He hideth my life in the depths of his love, and covers me there with his hand, and covers me there with his hand. When clothed in his brightness, transported I rise to meet him in the clouds of the sky. His perfect salvation, his wonderful love, I shout with the millions on high. He hideth my soul in the cleft of the rock, the shadows of dry, thirsty land. He hideth my life in the depths of his love, and covers me there with his hand, and covers me there with his hand. Part 6. Behold, I make all things new. We're on page 69. B.T. Hollis, track number 9. We just got a few pages to finish this up, and we're going to go into something else. It says that, let's turn to a prayer thought taken from Revelation 16. Okay, Revelation 16, first verse. And I heard a great voice out of the temple saying unto the seven angels, go your ways and pour out the vials of the wrath of the Elohim upon the earth. And the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men, which had the mark of the beast, and upon them which worshipped his image. And the second angel poured out his vial upon the sea, and it became as the blood of a dead man, and every living soul died in the sea. Now, what's it talking about? Why would the angel go pour out his vial upon the sea, and every living soul in the sea died? Well, we know that our soul only belongs to man. I don't know of animals that have a living soul, or fish in the sea. I believe that man is the only one. So this sea would have to talk about the sea of people. Number four. And the third angel poured out his vial upon the rivers and fountains of waters, and they became blood. And I heard the angel of the waters say, "Thou art righteous, O Yahshua, which art and was and which shalt be, because thou hast judged us. For they have shed the blood of the saints and prophets, and thou hast given them blood to drink, for they are worthy." I heard another out of the altar say, "Even so, Yahshua Messiah, Almighty, true and righteous are thy judgments." And the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. And men were scorched with great heat, and blasphemed the name of the Yahweh, which hath power over these plagues. They repented not to give him glory. The fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast, and his kingdom was full of the darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain, and blasphemed the Elohim of heaven because of their pains, and their swords repented not of their deeds. And the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, and out of the beast, and out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. So the dragon is Satan himself. The beast is Obama, and the false prophet is his vice president of Joe Biden. We've been through this before. Joe Biden is a Catholic. He's a member of a certain order of the Catholics, like the Jesuits. And he's there for one reason, and that's to give false information to the president, which is lies. It's false information, and they're trying to enforce this false information. So that's what he's there for, to give lies, give interpretation of prophecy that's false. And that's what the world is being governed by, lies. "For they are the spirits of the devils working miracles, which go forth unto the kings of the earth and of the whole world, to gather them to the battle of that great day of Yahweh Almighty. Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments, lest he walk naked, and they see his shame. And he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon." And the seventh angel poured out his vial into the earth. And there came a great voice out of the temple of Yahweh from the heavens, saying, "It is done." And there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth. So mighty an earthquake and so great. And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. And great Babylon came into remembrance before Yahweh, to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. Now, what does it mean, and the great city, Babylon, was divided into three parts? Well, we know that the Vatican is just itself there in Italy, Rome. The Vatican is an independent nation of its own. We know London, England is also an independent nation within a nation. The Vatican is an independent nation within a nation. Washington, D.C. is an independent nation within a nation. Okay, so there's three cities that they call them royal cities of the earth. And they all rule over the part of the world that they reside in. Wherever they're at, they rule over that part of the world. Okay. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found, and there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. And men blasphemed Elohim because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceedingly great. Okay, that ends your prayer thought. Let's go right on into now our study. Like I said, we're on page 69. This is part 6 of Behold, I Make All Things New. Now pay attention to the very first part of what I'm about to read here. But this shall be the covenant, declares the Yahweh, concerning this glorious truth of the kingdom. Now this truth that he's about to reveal to you, he said it's a glorious truth of the kingdom. It's a glorious truth. That I will make with the house of Israel. Let's talk about the whole 12 tribes now, once they're put back together. And the covenant is with Judah, the lawgiver, to enforce the covenant that's for the whole 12 tribes. After those days, saith the Yahweh, I will put my law in their inward parts, and write it in their hearts, and will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. They shall teach no more every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Yahweh. For they shall all know me from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith the Yahweh. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. Jeremiah 31:33-34. It says, And they shall call them, claims Isaiah, the holy people, the redeemed of the Yahshua, Isaiah 62:12. And an highway shall be there, he assures, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those, the wayfaring men, though fools shall not err therein, Isaiah 35:8. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, Matthew 24:14. The work of the gospel shall end, and probation shall close for every human being. Okay, now this gospel is going to be preached to all nations after the beast and the false prophet are taken out of the way and destroyed. Believe it or not, the gospel is going to be taken because the people, when they make the last decision for salvation, they're not going to have that beast there threatening them with a life and death situation. He does that before this gospel goes forth. Because once it's Israel, the whole 12 tribes are made up. They are filled with the Holy Spirit. Nothing can touch them. And so, because Satan has been bound in chains already. Because Revelation 17 says he, those 10 horns make war with the Lamb and he overcomes them. When does that happen? At the time that the Lamb stands up to deliver the saints, there in Daniel 12:1-2, at the beginning of all this controversy. He stands up at before the winds are let loose, just at the time that the beast threatens to take completely over. And that's coming up right now in this next election. We're going to see this beast make a move to take over completely the Republican and Democratic Party and everybody in the United States. In other words, nullify the Constitution and completely set up a dictator, a government. And that's what the beast, that's his format, is a dictatorship. So it says, when this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached, and then the world is going to be free to hear the gospel, and everybody's then going to have an equal chance to either accept or reject without any governments or anybody coercing them, because they're not going to be having war anymore because all the wicked has been taken out of the way. So there's no reason then for the people that's left to have to live behind locked doors with their guns cocked, ready to defend themselves. No, they beat their swords in the plowshares, and they learn war no more at this time. When both Jew and Gentile who have responded to the call have been gathered from the four corners of the earth, then will the harvest end, then will the last lingering moment of probationary time have fled away forever. Then will the end have come, and from the great white throne will have gone forth the immutable fiat. He that is unjust, let him be unjust still. And he which is filthy, let him be filthy still. And he that is righteous, let him be righteous still. And he that is holy, let him be holy still. Revelation 22:11. Learning to their terror with the passing of probation that they are forever lost, the neglectful will cry out bitterly. The harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are now saved, Jeremiah 20. Well, how do they know that? Well, whenever they see the wicked all destroyed, taken out of the way, no more danger to those that are wanting to be peaceful, and they're all taken out of the way, and that they have rejected the truth, and they at one time knew the truth, but they apostatized from it, left it. And so, what happened? The gospel is going forth now, the 144,000. You've got the 200 million that joins the 144,000 on down the line, the great multitude, in Revelation 7:9. And whenever these apostatized people that had once knew the truth and apostatized from it, representing the five foolish virgins, and they said, oh my goodness, look what's going on over there. They claim that that's the kingdom, and millions of people are flowing into it. They're going all over the world. So, oh my goodness, this is the harvest that the Bible talked about here in the end time. This is the harvest of souls. This is the harvest of the nation. What are we doing standing here? Why aren't we a part of that the harvest? Why aren't we in a leadership role? Why aren't we out there harvesting these souls? I thought we had the gospel. And all these terrors has been cut off from the Adventist Church. And when 44,000 came forth, this is the one that's going to be doing this. They're going to be wailing and gnashing their teeth. They said, well, we could have been the leaders ourselves, gathering in these souls. Instead, here we are cast out. Okay. So it says, behold, I come quickly, declares Yahshua. Following his Solomon pronouncement at the close of probation, verse 11, and my reward is with me to give every man according unto his works shall be, Revelation 22:12. Here is another evidence that probation closes before the Yahshua's visible return. And the close of the seventh plague Yahshua himself visible to every eye, Revelation 1:7, shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet of Yahweh, and the dead in Yahshua shall rise first, then we which are alive and remain shall be caught together with them in the clouds, to meet the Yahshua in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Yahshua. Well, we know that this is impossible for this scene to end up this way in the world. We know it's impossible. From the unfolding of prophecy, we know it's impossible. Prophecy tells us that Yahshua comes, takes the reins in his own hands, starts the judgment of the living, opens the seventh seal, and that begins the judgment, the harvest time. That sets the stage for the judgment and the harvest will start with the first of the first fruits, the wave sheaf. And then you have the first fruits, the wheat, the 144,000. And Yahshua is here, and he stands on the Mount Zion with the 144,000, standing with him on the land, and he coronates them, and then he goes before them and gives them their power and commission to go and gather their brethren. And Yahshua he's already come. So this is old Adventist teaching. This is just plain old Seventh-day Adventist teaching. That's all they ever wanted to understand and believe about the second coming of Yahshua. So V.T. Holliff, he's just an Adventist. He's just straight out of the Adventist church. He's just a babe. He's just a babe in the truth. He was just feeding from the milk of the word until Yahweh gave him this new light on who the rod and who he has appointed. And then Yahweh started giving him, on a daily basis, the understanding of this new truth. But he doesn't know what to do about the second coming early on. So he just quotes what Ellen G. White says about it. Okay. Ever will be with the Yahweh, 1 Thessalonians 4:16-17. With the righteous dead of all ages being resurrected and joined with the living saints, there it is right here in the 12th prayer by the tower, the kingdom is completely made up, the righteous having been set on his right, the kingdom, and the wicked on his left, Babylon. Then while the king sends those on his left unto the everlasting punishment, he says unto those on his right, come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Matthew 25:46. Following this is realized the long awaited fruition of the glorious hope engendered of the Yahshua's promise. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. John 4:2-3. The stirring hope of every Christian is beautifully foreshadowed in the translation of Enoch, Genesis 5:24. For the translation of the Elijah, 2 Kings 2:11, and the resurrection of the multitude whom Yahshua led on high, Matthew 27:52-53, Ephesians 4:8, a threefold typification in triple accord with the Yahweh's law of type, that where there is type, there must also be antitype. Where there are not assuredly in this connection to be an antitype, ascension of all the saints, then there would not have been a type translation of Enoch and Elijah, an ascension of the multitude. The type would have been arbitrary, purposeless, and misleading. Not only the saints, therefore, but also the heavens shall depart. The wicked shall cry to the mountains to fall upon them. With the close of the seventh plague will come the fullness of the end of the wicked. exclaims the Revelator, the heaven, the atmosphere of our earth, Genesis 1:8, departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island moved out of their places. The kings of the earth and the great men and the rich men and the chief captains and the mighty men and every bondman and every free man hid in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains, saying to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? Revelation 6:14-17. The fact that all these events close with the second coming of Yahshua. Now see, here's that again, the second coming of Yahshua. Vitihalif is keeping that picture painted in front of the Levitians. That the Adventists had painted a portrait of this, and he's keeping that portrait ever before them. Okay, so the fact that all these events close with the second coming of Yahshua. Well, I agree that when Yahshua's second coming, when he comes and when he gets here and starts leading, he's the man on the white horse. In Revelation 19, that goes forth and destroys all the wicked. He has to come here and destroy all the wicked first, get them out of the way so he can harvest all of the righteous that are left. The wicked destroyed first. The fact that all of these events close with the second coming of Yahshua also, the facts that the prophecies plainly declare that Elohim will gather all his people from among the nations, call forth his own from the grave, catch up all the redeemed, both the living and the resurrection, to meet him in the air and to go with him to the mansions which he has been preparing for them ever since his ascension, destroy all the wicked, leave the earth empty, without life or light, then make it void and without form, and finally let not the dead live again until the 1,000 years are finished. All these facts make manifest that the earth is to be in a state of chaos while the saints live and reign with Yahshua in heaven during the 1,000 years. See, all we have a picture of is that we're going to live and reign in heaven the 1,000 years. Okay, well, this is true. This is true. Wherever Yahshua is at, it will be heaven. There's no doubt about it. But it's on this earth. But he brings the holy city down and says, behold, I create all things new. I create the heavens and the earth. Okay, all new. Okay, in this way, Satan is bound by a chain of circumstances which makes it impossible his deceiving the nations until the 1,000 years are finished and until the Yeshua again returns with the saints, calls forth the wicked dead from their graves and allow them to live for a short season, a season in which Satan again deceives them. And a short season is 100 years. That's pointed out in the prophecy of Isaiah 65. Looking forward unto the resurrection after the millennium, the Revelator saw that the wicked went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about and the beloved city, and fire came down from Yahweh out of heaven and devoured them. And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are. This is the second death, Revelation 20, verse 9, 10 and 14. Then the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given unto the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Hitherto is the end of the matter, Daniel 7, 27, 28. seeing that all these things shall shortly come to pass, stand ye in the ways, says the Yahshua, and see and ask for the old paths, Jeremiah 6:16. Neither give heed unto fables and endless genealogy, which minister question rather than righteous edifying, which is in faith, so do. 1 Timothy 1:4. Not giving heed to Jewish fables and commandments of men that turn from the truth. 1 Timothy 1:14. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap unto themselves teachers having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto fables. 2 Timothy 4:3-4. My speech and my preaching, says the Apostle Paul, was not with enticing words of man's wisdom, but in the demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of Yahweh. 1 Corinthians 2:4-5. At this council, one Elohim's people away from the precarious practice of the hanging their doctrines and their faith on the gilded hooks of the perverted interpretations and of rendering from tongues unknown to them the Hebrew, the Greek, and this, that, or the other, and of the interpreted translation that bolstered up and served the interest of the theological preconceptions and pre-derelictions better than does the authorized version, the version which Elohim in his providence and in his foreknowledge of finishing his work by the English-speaking world has given to his people to lead them into his kingdom. Beware therefore of the pretensions of the pseudo scholarship, which assumes to be more dependable than that which Elohim himself has chosen and wrought in simplicity. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. Matthew 24:35. Okay, so his word is not going to pass away. Okay, that ends the track. That ends that, and we're just getting about halfway through a sermon here. Let's now go to the White House recruiter, and let's look at that again. It says, start with page one. This is E.T. Hoddup, and I don't know exactly what track number he called this.
It's not. It's not got a number.
Oh, this is one of the miscellaneous tracks. This is not a track number. Okay, it's 1951 when this was copyrighted, so this is getting on. Peter Hollis had been in ahead of Iraq for about 21 years this time. And this is right after World War II, and he had made some predictions there about World War II that didn't come out the way he predicted. And that was in the track War News forecast. But he did a good job, though, on laying a foundation, because he said World War II didn't end at that time. He said we're going to have another... The rest of the World War II is going to be in the future. And so this is what we're looking at today, the finishing of World War II, which will actually culminate in being World War III. And that's what a lot of pundits and news people are saying right now, that we are actually in World War III with those terrorist issues. This is World War III. Okay. Never did the clouds of war, so strange and so dark, hang in an angry thunderhead over the world. But never did the world see itself as it does today. everywhere in government, in industry, in halls of learning, in the churches and homes, on the streets, in every walk of life, the question uppermost is, whither bound mankind? From preeminent scientific and journalistic spokesmen come such representative utterances as these. What is the story of man? It is that men die, man survives. Now men are measurably nearer the most terrible of all the climaxes they have brought upon themselves in their long history of the struggle. For if the climax comes, it will change life and change the world. But it will not end life, it will not destroy the world. In this utmost climax, or perhaps in its prospect, men may at last find the secret of peace and a way to live without destruction. That is a hope. The certainty is that man will be on earth making a world life, October 3, 1949, page 22. Einstein agreed that other nations can rediscover our secret processes by themselves, that no military defense can be expected, and preparedness is futile, that if another war breaks out, atom bombs will surely destroy civilization. It is important, he went on to say, to enlighten public opinion on the real situation about the bomb. Only the prevention of war by action on an international scale, which will make preparation for war unnecessary and even impossible, can save us from its consequences. Newsweek, March 10, 1947. History in the large areas of the world has been rolled back. Fanaticism has replaced reason, terror, compromise, hate, friendship, science, education, and philosophy. The vehicles of progress for the Western man have been perverted, distorted, and retooled into weapons against civilization. Edgar Hoover, that was head of the FBI, you know, in a report sent out by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The First World War was a decided shock to the earlier period of the optimism. Today, the shock is almost incredibly greater. Insecurity and strife are so general that the prevailing attitude is one of the anxious and pessimistic uncertainty. John Dewey, Reconstruction of the Philosophy, page 8. There is only too much reason to fear that Western civilization, if not the whole world, is likely in the near future to go through a period of immense sorrow and suffering and pain. Bertrand Russell on the subject. If we are to survive this dark time, in the New York Times Magazine, September 3, 1950. And that's the year that beat the other call for the 144th time. To come forth, and of course, he saw all this stuff. He said, we're at the end. His 144,000 don't come and save us now. Wow, we got to have them. We just got to have them. So V.T. Hallock tried to do this in his own knowledge and his own strength. Because a great fear came upon him. That's why he's writing this article. We have now arrived at the ultimate stage in history. What is ultimately required of us is required of us now. It is very late. Perhaps nothing can save us, but the handwriting on the wall is plain enough. It says to the people of the earth, unite or die. Dr. Robert M. Hutchins, well, now that message is right now. is the good people unite or die. This is where we're at. You always got to have a righteous leader to emerge that will lead, show the people how to unite and what to unite upon. The world out there don't know what to unite upon because the Adventists have betrayed their trust. The Davidians let down the gauntlet. They betrayed their trust. Brother Johnson was the last that had the banner. He's the one that was carrying the torch for inspiration and for the House of Israel, the Seventh-day Adventists, and the Davidians. And he betrayed them. His light went out. So where is anybody left? Okay, everyone is agreed that an atomic bomb is world suicide, that no one can win. No scientist of repute doubts the fact that every country with an industrial capacity will have the atomic bomb in 5 years. We therefore have just 5 years to build for peace. That's Dr. Robert M. Hutchins, Chancellor of Chicago University, and the Chicago Daily Tribune, March the 26th, 1946. So, Irvici, I was quoting all this stuff, and he said, now here we are, 5 years later. And this is 1951, this tract was written. So it's 1946, 1951, 5 years. Okay, now, it says, there can be no doubt about the world crisis. We are living at one of those turning points of history which offers two roads, one of which leads to death and the other unto life. The fact is, the H-bomb represents mankind's final suicidal triumph, the unlocking of the inmost secrets of nature for purposes of total destruction. It brings into absolute focus the failure of a materialistic civilization which has sought to organize its life apart from Yahweh. C. Ashton Oldham, formerly Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Albany, on the world crisis and the future, in the Bulletin of the Church Peace Union for June. People are discovering a frightful queerness has come into life. Even unobservant people are betraying by fits and starts a certain wonder, a shrinking fugitive sense that something is happening so that life will never quite be the same. But if that was true back then how true is it today? Alright, spread out and examine the pattern of events and you will find yourself face to face with a new scheme of being hitherto unimaginable by the human mind. Writers are convinced there is no way out, around or through the impasse. It's the end. H.G. Wells, Los Angeles Examiner, October 21st, 1945. In this thoughtfully considered opinion of these eminent on-the-scene observers, this generation is at the zero hour of civilization. Whether we realize it or not, the day of doom is shortening its shadow. We are face to face with the most momentous issue ever to confront a generation of men. Atomic warheads, lethal rockets, poison gas, bacterial bombs, super submarines boring through the mighty deep, and supersonic aircraft stabbing through space above. What mean these and other dread devices of the destruction? What do these signs of the times portend for the church and for all the world? Had the question flung itself at any generation in the days of the Yahweh, ancient prophets then, beyond doubt, there would have answered as the church lives and as it is certain that Elohim lives, it would be impossible that he leave his people in darkness concerning the signs of their time. And their answer must certainly be our answer too. Moreover, it is a self-evident fact that if we want to know, Elohim will enable us to know the true meaning of these precedently destructive things. From the outset, this much is clearly manifest. If the super bombs, super bombers, and super all important nothing else, they without question threaten civilization, a faint idea of the devastating and demoralizing consequences of their use is to be gained from the scene of the aerial destruction depicted on the cover page. Manifest, too, is a certainty that heaven has permitted these instruments of the destruction to come in order to rouse Christendom, ministry, and laity alike unto a concerted, enlightened, all-out action as Yeshua leads the head to save man from himself and from the devil. Christianity failing this task and leaving the world to save itself as best it can, the enemy will ere long wipe out not only the knowledge of Elohim and of salvation, but also civilization itself. Indeed, every open-eyed observer can distinctly see that while heaven and earth wearily wait upon Christians to save or to take the offensive against all unrighteousness, the power of evil is exerting an utterly sinister influence to the Christless men and women, such as bear the red torch of the communism. Grim indeed is the picture, and the stark peril of it hurls its challenge at Christendom as a whole. What shall we do about it? Close our eyes tied unto it, or arise in the face of it, and be Noah's, Gideon's, David's, Elijah's, Daniel's, Luther's, and all such with a faith, or with a faith to do something about it while the light still shines and while opportunity still remains up? Will we lay well to the heart the tragic truth that the sin of the world's impenitence lies at the door of the church? Great Controversy 389. Will we accept the supreme Annunciation, glory to Yahweh in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward man? Luke 2:14. As the supreme trust and duty of the church, more than of the state, our country, and the whole world need the church, and Yahweh is waiting for her members, both laity and ministry, to arise, shine, Isaiah 60:1. Every Christian who truly knows that the gospel is the power of Yahweh unto salvation knows that if the masses were converted to Yeshua, they there would not, indeed could not, be any aggressive communistic or other totalitarian power in the world. And therefore, no such threat as militant communism now present to civilization, and every Christian also knows that there is no power on earth other than the sword of the Spirit that can cut off the head of the Goliath of the day. What pity then, and what a recreancy to trust should the church, the Adventist church, not immediately lift from the shoulders of the state her own neglected part, which is the greater part of the burden of peacemaking, to continue to leave government to bear the whole load and to do the best it can without the divine enlightenment and without power, which only the church can impart. And now Donald Trump is coming forth, and he's been recognized as the Savior and the Deliverer. But according to what I just read here, he's going to have someone that has a connection with Yahweh and that is empowered with the Spirit of Heaven to join him. And Yahweh just impressed me here this last year that Donald Trump's been on this campaign trail, that we're going to join up together. We're going to have to join up together. And we're going to have to be filled with the Holy Spirit. And when we join up with Donald Trump, this is what's going to be the thing that delivers not only the United States, but the whole world. Yahweh has to have a visible, antithetical King Cyrus, which was preordained for this, to counter the evil government that's going on to carry out their agenda, and that is the final destruction of the world. And that's what they're on a fast roll to do. And so Yahweh's raised up a counter to that, a visible counter to that. But as I just read to you here, and I'm going to read it again, every Christian who truly knows that the gospel is the power of Yahweh unto salvation, knows that if the masses were converted to Yahshua, there would not, indeed, could not be any aggressive communistic or other totalitarian power in the world, and therefore no such threat as militant communism now present into civilization. And every Christian also knows that there is no power on earth other than the sword of the Spirit that can cut off the head of the Goliath of the day. So we're talking about a beheading, spiritual, literal beheading, and dismantling the wicked nations and taking their power away from them. You're going to have to cut off the leader's head of this great tyrannical power. You have to cut the leader's head off. What pity, then, and what recreancy to trust, should the Adventist Church not immediately lift from the shoulders of the state her own neglected part, which is the greater part of the burden of peacemaking, but continue to leave government to bear the whole load and to do the best it can without the divine enlightenment? That's what's going on right now, and without power, which only the church can impart. Now, Donald Trump, he's in need of this enlightenment, and he's trying to get it from the evangelical. And he's getting some help, but he's not getting the answer that he wants. He's confiding into his son-in-law, which is a Judeo-Christian, which is a Sabbath keeper. He's already converted Donald Trump to believing in the Sabbath and the health laws. Of course, Donald Trump has always obeyed the health laws even before his son-in-law was born, I think. And virtually pushing the church out of all communist-dominated countries, the enemy has already stolen a long and victorious march on her and is now fiercely fighting to extend his victory to the final triumph and pushing her from the very face of the earth. But there is yet hope if only she will courageous loyalty respond to the divine command now ringing forth unto every defender of the faith. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Yahweh is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. That means the house of Israel. So that means the Adventist Church. Spiritual Israel and the Davidians. Gross darkness is going to cover them. Brother Johnson's light went completely out in 2002. And he was the one that had in charge of the candlestick that lightens the sanctuary up when you go into the sanctuary. The candlestick, you have a seven lamps of brain on it, and it gives light to the whole place in the sanctuary. Brother Johnson's in charge of that, and he didn't attend to the oil. He got careless and didn't keep the oil put in the lamp, and it went out and left him in the midnight darkness. And he pronounced his own doom. The last sermon I ever heard him preach from the pulpit, at the end of it, he says, "There shall be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth." His face turned dark. It turned dark. He turned toward the congregation. He said it two more times. "There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth." He said it three times. Okay, "For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth and gross darkness the people. But the Yahshua shall arise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. And the Gentiles shall come to thy light, and kings to the brightness of thy rising." Isaiah 60, verse 1 to 3. "In the power crazed rule or ruin, war bent, and hell bent, self-destructive course of mankind, in the angry and catastrophic upheaval and outbreakings of the elements of nature, and in the cumulative fulfillment of the fast unfolding prophecies in the word of Elohim, the signs of the times thunder, the warning appeal that we arise into Elohim's light and make haste to rescue his people from the ills which threaten to devastate the world." If such is not the church's great mission and duty at this crisis hour, what need then do the Yahshua and or Yahweh and the world have of her? What can the church do unless her members, both lay and clerical, arrive and together as one man and throw their all into the conflict? Well, we know the Adventists did do this. She had her last chance with Gilead Center from 1970 to 2003. She had her last chance. And so it says, we knowing as we do the answer to these urgent questions, what excuse will we have if we do not now arouse ourselves and all saints and Christendom along with us to do what the gospel commands us to do? Regardless how dramatic and impressive any demonstrations the church may put on, it is no secret that even if she is not pushed out of the place or country, still at her present peace or pace of preaching the gospel of the kingdom, a temporal millennium will not suffice her in which to warn the world, finish the work, and bring the kingdom in. And every enlightened mind knows this to be the inevitable truth. This brings the close of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archives to hear this message and more. We're going to close now with a song. "Because He Lives" by the Blackwood Brothers Gospel Quartet.
God sent His Son, they called Him Jesus. He came to love, heal, and forgive. He lived and died. My Savior lives, because He lives, I can face tomorrow, because He lives. Yeah.